condition, my condition was ill. I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in. Oh.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 14. NASDAQ futures down 87. Now that's the September numbers. After that's the last time we're going to give the September numbers. I think they're done today. And we're going to do the December numbers, which are actually down 15.5 and down 91. So we're switching from the spoos to the sperms, Ricky. The sperms. Do you have any idea what I'm talking about, Kevin? Do you?
I have no idea.
Is Kevin with us?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I definitely don't want to know.
You have no idea what I'm talking about?
Well, I know what the spoos are.
What are they?
They're the spoos. They're the, what's SPDU stand for?
What's the Standard & Poor's 500 future?
Yeah, I'm just going blank, Tom.
No, it's a few, but the SPU every month in the year on the futures side of the world, which the S&P futures are, hence the name futures, has a letter attached to it, and the letter for September is U. So when the S&Ps first came out, I mean, I was trading on the floor before there were S&Ps when they first came out. The month just happened to be September, which was the U. So they were the SPU, hence the name the spoos. But actually, the sperms are the July. And I think the H's are the March, and December's are the what the hell are the December's? The December's
Wise.
Are December's are the Q's.
The Q's.
Or the S's, actually okay. The S's, yeah.
So
S's.
Yeah, so that's that's what I was looking for. Is that what does the U stand for? And I know you've told me that before, but I couldn't remember. That's for September, huh?
But it was the easiest one to say. And when you're in the pit, so no matter what month it was, they were the spoos. Even if they were July's, which should have been the SPMs. So they're always known through the world as the spoos, even though. Technically, that's only the September S&P. So now if you were to talk about the spoos, I think there's a next September that comes on the board next Monday. But if anybody says the spoos, they really mean the Decembers. This is all trading.
So
parlance.
If I say the spoos, I don't really mean it.
You mean whatever the front month is in the S&P, even if it doesn't happen to be the spoo.
Okay.
How's that for a...
That's a better explanation than I would have given you. So
yeah, hey,
I'm sitting here, you know, reaching for the words too. So okay.
Oh, I used to know all the months, but I don't anymore. I'm pretty sure July is, or whatever it would be. August, July would be June. I think the Junes are the M's. July is the N. Anyway, I Dan would know all these still by heart. If we trade on the trading floor over there in the corn pit. But anyway, I was just looking at I don't know. Dan asked me a question yesterday about interest rates and how people are, the entire world on TV, or financial TV, is making a statement. But before I do that, Kevin, I just happened to see here on Core Digest this morning, some guy writes in all kinds of, you know, I'm going to say he's a right-winger, but I don't know if he is or he isn't. Joe Biden has taken 382 vacation days off to date. That equates to over one full year on vacation out of 3 years as a U.S. president. Is he the most ineffective president in history? Well, he may be, but not because... So then this guy goes out to say, the guy who answers the question says, by the way, Trump took 381 vacation days. George Bush took like 1,000 in his 2 terms. And Obama took like 380-something. And you know what gets me about this, Kevin? I know I can talk to you about this because you have been, I'll use the term big shot, at a bank and have gone on many seminars and many things out of town where you're meeting with people and you're doing this stuff. And I mean, I don't want to call anybody ignorant because they aren't. Uninformed may be the term. Any of those things that you do, that you have done, and what I used to do on the board, and we, as chairman of the marketing committee, we had, I use the term boondoggles for these member firm guys where we took them places and paid for all their stuff. I mean, really nice places like Turnberry and places like that I could never go. And people say to me, hey, that must have been great, you're on vacation. When everybody says that, you can just tell they have no idea what it's like to be, I won't say at that level, but to be at a meeting for 3 or 4 days with people where you're never off your game. Do you think that Biden works with all his, any of these guys, you know, maybe Bush, I don't know, any of these guys, when they were at Camp David, were any less in touch than they were in the White House? Anybody who describes that as a vacation is out of their mind. I mean, maybe you can go out for a walk at Camp David without having a bunch of people following you, like you can out of the White House. So in that sense, it may be less pressure. But the idea that a president is ever on vacation, Kevin, how, it's not my idea of vacation, is it?
Well, Tom, I would say a couple of things as it pertains to Biden. One is, you're probably right, he's no less connected when he's in the White House than he is when he's on vacation. But I'm not sure he's connected in either case.
Well, yeah, that's a different subject, but yeah.
That's a slightly different issue. We also, look, we see presidents playing golf, we see all that kind of stuff, but, what's the video we see of Biden? He's sitting on the beach, you know?
Yeah.
He's sitting on the beach, he's not very connected to anything at all. He just kind of sits there. So, yeah, I think he's kind of checked out, but he's not in charge anyway, so who cares?
Well, but I'm saying, when I was on these trips, I'd come back exhausted every time. Even if you have a drink or two with somebody, you're always on your game. It's not like having a beer with you, BSing about the Cubs. You know, I guess people who've never done it don't have any feel for that.
Well, yeah, and that's true. It is exhausting. I'm going on 1 week after next, and it's going to be work, and then I have to work in some Zoom classes while I'm there. So,
you know what I remember about Turnberry, though? I mean, that's a place that Michael Jordan played like the 40 holes of golf before the playoff game against Miami in 1 year. It's big, high-end money. But the thing I remember about it is the golf course, in addition to being gorgeous, is like a bird sanctuary of some kind. There are more different kinds of birds than you've ever seen in your life in the place. It is spectacular. We're just watching the animal. What's the birds? Fauna is the plants. What are the birds? Whatever the birds are. But I mean, they have swans and all kinds of stuff that I never got to see. And that's what I remember about the place. Oh, the other thing was they had some kind of a wedding reception. Wedding rehearsal thing, Kevin, and all these cars are pulling in the parking lot. And I mean, if you had a new car that wasn't a Mercedes or Rolls or something, you, I don't know if you even get in the lot. Well, this older lady comes in her Rolls and she almost runs over the valet guy. And the guy puts up his hands, oh, stop it, we'll take it from here. The dude goes,
so what, that was Mrs. Magoo?
Pretty much. It evidently just so happened, we'd come in from we had to play golf with this thing, and Audrey goes into the ladies' room just as this lady walks in. Audrey goes, if I would have rolled her, neither one of us would have had a working day in our life. The jewelry she had on. But I think this had to be 1997, Kevin, 96. The rehearsal dinner was $800 a plate. It was like, how many, 20-some years ago, for God's sake. Anyway, to get sort of back to business and the big lie, which I've been talking about maybe out of boredom, if you tell people something enough, you know, often enough, they sort of tend to believe it. Last night, I had to go to a wake right with my bro, and he says to me, "How come?" You know, Dan is about as bright as it gets. He goes, "You know more about economic history than just about anybody." He goes, "Tell me why, on every one of these channels, CNN, CNBC, Fox, Buzz, whatever, that every one of these guys and ladies, is now equating, like, essentially the normal rate of interest, which essentially equals inflation." He goes, "Everybody's talking about we're on our way now back to the normal rate of interest, which should be like 3% or 2.75. Dan goes, "Does anybody think that this inflation is not going to be 2.5, 3, like, forever?" He goes, how is the normal rate of interest equal to the inflation rate? It seems like you're getting nothing for your money." I go, "Bingo. How is it that we've got that in people's brains now? Just because we've done it for 20 years, Kevin? How do people don't understand that when you give somebody your money for them to use, they're supposed to pay you for that privilege? Just like if you sold them concrete or steel. How have we managed to get a major section of our population to believe something totally different?"
It is the approach that if you say it enough times, enough people are going to believe it. Plus, people are going to believe what they want to believe anyway. So you're just tapping into existing bias.
Well, I just
so, but so and so how does that shake out today? Well, you know, there's people who say the economy's fine, and there's people who say the economy sucks, and a lot of the economy's fine is people are the ones who also like the political status quo, and I don't necessarily mean that as Democrat or Republican. I just mean that's the uniparty status quo.
Well, so, it's a status quo if you're rich.
Of course, it's fine. There's a real funny clip of a CNN reporter. They had this like boat parade for Trump, so CNN sends a reporter out there, and so she's asking this guy, "Well, you can afford a boat, so the economy must not be too bad." He said, "Look, I earned everything I have. I'm ex-military. I worked for a long time. I'm retired now, and I want that to still have some value. I still want as we go forward." But it just shows this mindset that has a lot of the people, and these are the people that are looking into the camera and speaking to us. And they are so disconnected from reality that's part of it too. And so when we hear these same messages over and over again, it's when you get the cognitive dissonance that people get pissed off. And I think that's where you see a lot of the electorate right now is they're saying, "You keep telling me everything's fine. You keep telling me everything's working. And I can't get through the checkout at the grocery store without putting some stuff back."
Well, I would agree with that 100%, which I shouldn't, because I should just disagree with you on principle. But neither side has even proposed a solution for that. It hasn't.
Well, no, I saw Harris on the Oprah interview yesterday. She said she's going to control inflation by bringing down the cost of things.
Well, they understand, I think, the system symptoms, and they understand where a little bit of where people's bitching is coming from. But there is no solution whatsoever in regards to, let's see, we've got 1% of the population in big business that is borrowing money at less than the inflation rate. Hence, if you can do that, you're going to end up scooping up all the assets in the country. Meanwhile, the other 90% of the people are paying 20-some percent interest on credit cards. That's what, a 20% spread in the cost of money from the top three. Now, I'm talking about mortgages, that's kind of even. The rest of the stuff is, and there's business loans, I get it. This is not as black and white as I'm. But by and large, nothing can separate those people economically over the next 15 years than that happening, Kevin. Neither one of these people is saying, you know what? We're lowering the interest rate down to 3% to help people out. And oh, by the way, with that, there's a usury rate nationally on credit cards of 12%. Don't even think about charging more than that. Because we're going to make sure that everybody participates in this interest rate going down. There's not even a hint of that on either side, is there?
No, there isn't, and there should be, but again, and you'll sort of get this when you read that lovely copy of The Great Reset that I sent you.
I will. I'm working on it this weekend.
You have an agenda playing out that isn't a normal people type of agenda. This is your World Economic Forum agenda, and it's really, it's built around reshaping society in many ways, and that does mean keeping a lot of people dependent on government, and because that way government gets to tell you what to do. So you see a lot of that because they want to reshape society. And how can I best articulate this? That's where the power is. We always talk about who's really pulling the strings. Just go look at who attends that session when they have it. That's who is telling you exactly how the world is supposed to be. And if you push back on that, sorry, man, you might have assassination attempts on you.
I would come at it a little bit differently, Kevin.
Or you must be destroyed. I mean, think of it like this: you must be destroyed. How many people did they work on destroying during the COVID stupidity?
Oh yeah, a lot.
And so, yeah, we'll just gang up and destroy.
I think
as
you're,
long as you have control of media, you can do that.
Well, two questions. You always bring up questions. You and guys like Carl and Lou bring up questions. I think you're kind of, in terms of which comes first, the chicken or the egg, and I'm going back to that page which I threatened to always buy the book and bring it in here since I think the one I had got lost in a flood at my mother's house, The Sovereign State of ITT. And the page in there where Harold Janine is talking about how the world ought to be run by big corporations and these governments are just a bother. And that he and a few people like him had the solution for everybody. It came with the great wealth, of course, that they had, and that's why they were so smart, because they wouldn't be that wealthy if they weren't that smart. You know, that type of crap. And I think the push is for those guys to make incredible amount. I mean, Bill Gates could care less about an antitrust thing when he was running his place, right? I mean, they rolled over everybody. Those laws weren't for him, and he never got caught. And they still haven't gotten caught, you know. What I'm saying is, I think that's the big goal. And then when you're there and you have all the cash, the other stuff sort of falls out. Well, how do we make the other people behave in such a way that they just like their new role, where they're never going to be as rich as I am or anybody else, and they just bump along and are happy about it? I think one falls after the other, Kevin. But then again, you know, I'm probably way too economic oriented. I think it's like the nobles versus the serfs. Once you had the castle and all the properties, you get to tell people how good life was for them, because you got to work for them, and by the way, you get, you know, three squares a day and a place to sleep. You get to define what life should be for other people, because you got all the dough. I think the chicken comes before the egg in this case.
Well, it does, but think of the scene out of Chinatown. Who's producing today? I didn't hear.
Well, I mean,
who's on the board today?
Who's on the board?
Well, you're not running the show.
Oh, okay, but one of these days Ricky will be running the... Well, no, Ricky has to run the show. I wouldn't be able to get on the air
without
him. Who's
on the board today?
Ricky.
Okay, Ricky, I got an assignment for you, and that is I want you to go out, go on YouTube, you'll find it there, and just do Chinatown, the future.
Chinatown, the future. Give me a second.
Chinatown, the future. This is John Huston's character when Jake Giddies, played by Jack Nicholson, asks him how much he's worth, and then says, "How much more can you make? What do you want? What are you after?" And his response is, "I want the future, Mr. Getz. I want to buy the future." that's what you got. That's right. The mindset you have.
And the reason why the rest of us, through our voting, non-voting, people we voted for, something, allowed one group of people to... Kevin, you realize how easy it would be. Now, you ask yourself why in some areas... Now, Nancy and Audrey claim it's not happening here yet, thank God. You ask yourself why some of these big firms are buying houses. Well, last week, Redfin came out and said that even though there have been some places like Florida where prices have gone down, the average or the median, I don't know which one they had, Kevin, was up 6.7% last year. Okay, so if you got a mortgage at 7.5, you know, you're even, probably, and you're living there. Okay, so, but if you could go out and go get a corporate bond like some of these people can, at the 3 and 3.5 and 4% range, and can buy these homes that are, by the way, you're probably making money on the rent, and they're appreciating 6.7%. Kevin, even an orangutan can make money doing that. You can't screw up.
But you have to be able to get the money.
Yeah, so I'm saying, but...
So when did we do that big wealth shift on property ownership?
I think it's been kind of common. You know, it actually kind of started when Greenspan drew the rates down to 1% that one time.
Well, it did, and that makes a difference, but... What did we do? We told renters for the better part of 2 years that they couldn't be thrown out of their properties if they didn't pay their rent. You couldn't kick them out. You couldn't evict them. We had a moratorium on that imposed by the federal government.
Some states have almost a permanent moratorium on that.
Right. So if you're a small apartment building owner, an individual, maybe you have a six flat or maybe you have three or whatever, and you're counting on the cash flow on that to keep you alive. You bought the property, you've had it for a while, but it's the cash flow. You live on the cash flow for that, not necessarily for your whole income, but for your lifestyle, because you may have a full-time job as well, and now you don't have the cash flow. What had to happen after some significant period of time? You know, if there's a moratorium for 2 or 3 months, ouch. If there's a moratorium for 2 or 3 or for 2 years, say, what'd they have to do? Well, they had to dump off the property. And I know around here there were real estate companies that were buying it up.
Yep.
And so we just killed the small property owners.
Well, what did?
And that's a big wealth shift. Do you think that didn't happen on a national level? Of course,
it happens. It's my kind of one of my themes of the show, Kevin. Is I think you, if most people can figure out what my themes are. It happens all the time. It happened with Resolution Trust. What do you think it happened? What do you think happened with the farms? And again, every president is guilty of something for somebody, for some group. Resolution Trust was Bush. His buddies got all the people's property for next to nothing. What about 2008? How many people never missed a mortgage payment, were paying like 7, or everybody else was starting to pay 3, and they couldn't get to 3 because the place didn't appraise out? We can't lower your rate. Why? You can't afford it. It doesn't appraise out. Yeah, but I'm paying $1,000 a month. With the new rate, it would be $750. How can you tell me to my bare face that I'm paying $1,000 and I can't afford $750? Well, that's just the way it is. I mean, how, and now under the Trump tariff thing, and I'm not saying China's a good place or whatever, how many farms in the northern part, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and those kinds of places, soybean farmers went under because their soybeans went to China and they didn't go there for a couple of years, and their farms went for pennies on the dollar to big companies? It happens all the time, Kevin. And I think that if it keeps happening relentlessly, I think that obviously there's a, what's the, what was Adam Smith? There's a invisible hand.
Invisible hand.
I think there's maybe not even that invisible hand behind all this crap. You would think.
And the problem is the invisible hand of capitalism. The idea by that didn't account for government intervention.
But I think, Kevin, it's getting, you know, many years, but I think even this is before COVID, when the interest rates went down to like zero before COVID, 2020, right? They started going down. And they were going down. Anyway, they were down in the entire decade of 2010, 2020, interest rates had been low and went lower and lower and lower. I had credit card rates either unchanged or up in a decade. How does the Fed get on TV with this guy's bare face and talk about interest rates going down and helping all these people, and yet he knows that, okay, I guess if you really want to be an imbecile, you could say if somebody's rate went from 30% to 29.75%, you helped them out. Kevin, really? Really? I mean, my guys from the Fed one night, I was saying, you know, these credit card rates are pretty darn high. And he says, well, do you realize how many defaults there are in these things? I said, well, that means one of two things. Either means that the person maybe shouldn't have had a credit card in the first place. Or, I said, if I were to ask you a simple question, could you answer it? And he says, what do you mean? I said, well, if somebody writes off a credit card debt of $5,000 after, you know, somebody's had a credit card for like 10 years. Now, if they were to bought some, say, furniture 10 years ago for $2,000 and started making payments on it, then all of a sudden couldn't, and then there was a fee for not payment, and then they dropped it 30% on top of it. I said, when they write this stuff off, how much of the write-off is actually the price of what the person originally bought without the legal fees and all the other crap thrown at it? He looks at me and he goes, well, you got me there. He goes, it's probably all kinds of stuff piled on, and the nominal number they write off is nowhere near what the person originally
bought. Yeah, there's the balance. You have to take a loss on the balance. You have to back out the interest that you never collected.
Yeah.
And then you start talking about any collection activities, collection fees, all that kind of stuff. That's all part of the accounting for it. So let's go a little further. And let's, again, we talk about it because I don't believe that nobody understands what's happening. So there's this idea, and you've mentioned it, that, you know, Dan will tell you that there's a lot of people who they're just trying to do well, and they screw up, or they get it wrong, or they don't realize what the unintended consequences are. How many times have we heard during this campaign, well, we had the most significant immigration legislation on the table since the 80s or whenever we last tried to do a fully comprehensive. What the hell kind of an immigration bill was going to still let millions of people in the country? We weren't going to close the border until we hit a threshold, and the threshold had to do, I don't know if it was 200, I don't remember now if it was 200,000 a day or what. Now, what Carl's documented, and Carl, you're welcome to, I know you're listening, you're welcome to jump in on this. If we look at the situation in Ohio that everybody's discussing now, and the number of places that are hiring people who are in the country illegally, but they're hiring them via a non-government organization, so that's funded by public money, and they're hiring them for below market rate, which is kicking people out of jobs who otherwise would have them at a closer to market rate, and the NGOs getting a skin off off of it, and so you have this whole shell game. Well, gee, why would politicians on either side of the aisle favor that unless they're totally bought?
Well, you know? We're going to go to break here, but I remember the person or the name, but I sent out that article. We discussed it 3-4 weeks ago. Was how many NGOs on the border are making? There's like 4 or 5 of them that are.
I actually sent it to you first.
Yeah. Those guys were there when Republicans were around. The NGOs.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. This immigration bill that everybody talks about was negotiated bipartisan. It got killed by enough people. So that was good. But this idea that everybody's squeaking about it, who was going to benefit the most by it? And because otherwise you'd look at that and go, well, that's friggin' insane. Why would anybody support a bill that allows that many people across the border before you do a damn thing about it?
We got to go to a break, Kevin, but if somebody really wants to bore themselves on a snowy Saturday morning, just Wikipedia or dig into the history of the Resolution Trust. So long ago that you know, you don't even remember who the politicians were or care. And you're not blaming one side or the other. Well, I blame Bush, but the you read that thing and you get sick to your stomach, and it's the exact same thing that's happening today every single time. S&P futures down 17. NASDAQ futures down 89.50. Now that's the December NASDAQ. The December S&P. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. Address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Ricky on the board. S&P futures up, down 1875. NASDAQ futures down 95. I'm looking at this headline here. I'm going to have to give an assignment to Carl if he chooses to take it, like Mission Impossible. Get a load of this. Constellation Energy to restart Three Mile Island nuclear plant and sell the power to Microsoft for AI. I can't even believe that headline. Maybe it makes sense. I don't know. But Carl knows way more about that than me. We'll talk to him about it. Dow futures are down 24. I don't see anybody doing anything crazy here. Everybody was up yesterday, like, huge. Today we're just down a little bit. We got gold up again, though, which is gold up or the dollar down? That's the question. Nikkei up 568, another 1.5%. The rest of the world loves this. Hang Seng up 245, 1.4. Shanghai up 80 cents. They still, even though they're up a little bit the last couple days, are still dragging big time. But the Hang Seng is 18,258. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 131. That's 0.7%. FTSE down 47.6. CAC around down 51.7. So the Asian markets are essentially catching up to our huge rally yesterday. The other guys, European markets move lower following slew of central market decisions, central bank decisions. There you go. Yesterday, get a load of this if you didn't see it. Dow up 522, S&P up 95, NASDAQ up 440, 2.5%. That's a big number. Bonds, this is also kind of crazy. 10-year is up to 3.74, so it's gone up. 10-year rate has gone up since the other one's gone down. The Bund up 1 basis point, 2.21. Japan up down 1 basis point, 0.84. Oil down 31 cents, 71.64. Brent down 39 cents, 74.49. Natural gas unchanged, 234. RBOB down a penny, 204. Gold up 22 bucks, 26.36, back to where its high is. Silver up 17 cents, 31.60. This time, instead of being a sell at 30, silver was a buy at 30. You just never know. Copper up a penny, 4.35. Foreign exchange, U.S. dollar is 111.5, so it's down just a hair. The yen is yen falls as Bank of Japan governor steers clear of rate hike talk. There you go. It's sort of like market up as Kevin leaves the men's room. We're not sure there's a connection there, but I'm just going to say it anyway. The pound, 133, so it's up a little bit against the dollar as well. Crypto up $24, but really high, $63,405. Value of the dollar in your pocket going down, everything else going up. Now, the question is, which is which? We're not sure. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports? Cubs finally won.
That's right, Chief. Morning. It's currently 6:39 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 68 degrees right now with a high of 85. Partly sunny and very, very warm. Inhumid with a thunderstorm in spots into the early afternoon. So now we'll be mainly clear with a low of 68 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 74 degrees right now with a high of 95. Mostly sunny. So now we'll be clear with a low of 70 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago. Inbound Kennedy from Monroe is looking at 20 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 45 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 28 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 28 minutes. And Stevenson from 294, so the Dan Ryan is another 25 minutes. Lastly, sports, the MLB yesterday. Diamondbacks beat the Brewers 5-1, and the Cubs beat the Nationals 7-6. Today we got a couple more games. The Cubs and the Nationals at 1:20 p.m., Diamondbacks and Brewers at 7:10 p.m., and the White Sox play the Padres at 8:40 p.m. Lastly, NFL. Today the Patriots and the Jets play at 7:15 p.m., and this Sunday, as September 22nd, we got at 12 p.m. the Bears playing the Colts, and at 3:25 p.m. Cardinals versus Lions. Back over to you, Chief.
There's a Kevin. Are you? Do you want? Do you? You probably already have the Prime, but I don't even. To me, the Thursday football doesn't even exist.
Well, I have Prime, but I didn't bother watching that game. I don't care who wins it. Did you notice Ohtani's game yesterday?
I did. I was listening to it. It's a pretty.
If you're gonna cross that threshold. You know, that's doing it in style. He crossed the 50 with for both stolen bases and home runs last night. Went 6-for-6, hit 3 home runs, stole 2 bases. Crossing that 50-50 threshold in style, isn't it?
Yeah. If he doesn't pitch, you think they'll at least he'll play some outfield or something? Because he's certainly good enough an athlete to play outfield.
And he should be. You know, okay to start throwing this off season.
Well, his elbow must be.
That's how those surgeries work. It's a long time recuperation. But
I mean, his elbow can't be quote hurting him because nobody can hit like that if your elbow is no good.
Right.
God.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Did he actually have the surgery?
I think he did.
Yeah,
you know what, Ricky?
So long ago, I don't remember.
I think he had it at the end of last season. Ricky, why don't you check that out? I showed it to you, Tommy, arm surgery. And they just said he was going to take the year off.
Did you spell his name?
O-H-T-A-N-I.
Yeah. He's a big dude. How big is he? They showed him next to the guy in the Cubs. He had to be 8 inches taller than him.
Yeah, he's got good size.
Is he 6'4"? 6'5"?
I don't know. I'll tell you. Give me a sec.
Elbow surgery?
Yeah.
Second one, actually.
He had it last when? He had it last August?
Apparently, he had one on 2018.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's 2 injuries total.
And the last one was last fall?
Yes. Yeah, just about a year ago.
All right. Yeah, I mean, that has to be pretty healed up for you to bat like that and do all the other stuff, Kevin. I mean, it's... if your elbow is messed up, you can't do anything.
He's got a certain amount of strength. He just didn't want to put the throwing strain on.
Yeah.
So more bio information here.
I say he comes back as a knuckleballer.
We could do that. That'd be fun.
We should do. We should try that. We still got eligibility left.
Eligibility. You have eligibility if you're alive for professional sports. Yeah, he's 6'4".
I'm going to give you a chance to make a prediction here. According to my buddy Bill, who's a Marquette grad. He said his 60th anniversary up there, by the way. He claims that the basketball program has decided no NIL. Now, Connecticut obviously is in their same league. Well, they're playing with the same group of people, but it's like, depending how you define a league, they obviously are all in. What do you, if everybody sticks to their respective guns, what do you think 5 years from now those teams look like, Kevin?
Well, first of all, I don't know what no NIL means. But I don't know if you saw an article I sent you yesterday. They're not the only one, and they're not the first. But one of the ESPN writers, Adrian Wojnarowski, has left his writing gig to go to work for St. Bonaventure as their general manager.
Yeah, I just saw that yesterday. Yeah, you sent it.
And Duke has had that for a little while, and some of the, you know, a lot of the other programs. So this is St. Bonaventure, an Atlantic 10 team, and he's responsible for managing the roster, which means, you know, scouting the transfer portal and as well as recruiting activities and, you know, good traditional recruiting activities. And he's responsible for coordinating name, image, and likeness stuff. So that's kind of interesting. I haven't had time to go back and say who has those for football, but, you know, it would not surprise me if there's if Marquette puts somebody on the staff to handle all that kind of stuff. The question is, do they want to work with these collectives or not? That's, I mean, because honestly, you can't say I'm not doing NIL. If a Marquette basketball player wants to do, you know, some local promotions or even national promotions, if, you know, if it's an outstanding, you know, a recognizable name, you're telling me that Marquette's going to say, no, we don't do that? I don't think so.
Well, I was just going to say, maybe we should delineate, I'm going to say, the four levels of this, of payment, that, and you maybe can add, but I'm going to say there's the four levels, I think, that every conference now allows the school to compensate athletes for something, whether it's $3,000 a month or $2,500 a month, I think is the conference decides, right? So the idea
actually it's the school. This passed a few years back, and what you're talking about there is there's a living expenses stipend, and it's based on what each school projects living expenses to be for the student body in general. So that's one of those things that when you apply to a school, it's on their website.
Yeah.
They tell you what tuition is and then what you can expect to spend on living expenses.
So, I mean, you don't have a situation where Lou Holtz and Notre Dame got in trouble because somebody gave one of the kids bus fare to get his uncle's funeral or some crap, or that kind of thing. So,
right.
And you don't have guys not being able to afford a pizza at night, you know, that sort of thing.
Now, and that's nice that they get that. There's always the impression that that all college students are poor, and that's not, our college
right.
athletes are poor, and that's not true.
No.
Well, many of them, you know, have families who had college funds, and now they don't have a college fund, so they don't have to pay for college, so that fund is available for kids' expenses, for kids', you know, lifestyle when he's at college. So, you know, I'm just throwing that out there because...
Yeah, so, but I mean, that's...
Because
that's,
people tend to think of, you know, this is the poor college athlete who can't afford to, you know, get a hamburger.
But there's not a whole lot of, well, there are some, but I mean, there's not a whole lot of students whose parents can easily write the check for $75,000 every year after tax.
Agreed.
But I'm saying, okay, that's, I'm going to say that's payment,
so that,
payment
so,
level
so
one.
So the long-term plan may have been something completely different from private school tuition or even state school tuition, but nevertheless, that doesn't mean that they're broke.
Right. So that's payment level one, and that's kind of okay across the board, it appears. Payment level two is, I'm going to say, the pure form of NIL, and I keep saying, you know, some young lady's a model. She could be a research nurse somewhere getting paid. The guy could be in a play, I mean, drama could be his major, where he's getting paid outside, which you couldn't do before because they owned your likeness, and now the Supreme Court says you can. But this is stuff you essentially do on your own. You do a podcast, you do something. Now, if the podcast has you in your Notre Dame hat and Notre Dame shirt, and you're marketing Notre Dame and just as part of yourself, now that's kind of sloppy in my mind. But the pure form is somebody says, I'm a good-looking guy or girl. These guys want me to model a flannel shirt or whatever. I'm going to go on a weekend in the summer, and I'm going to do that. They couldn't do it before. Now they can. So that's the pure form, in my opinion. Now, the other form is, now you got these collectives that are just pumping money to where...
Tom, that's also Caitlin Clark getting her big Nike deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Caleb Williams doing Dr. Pepper.
Or she's doing State Farm commercials. That's, you know, I got no problem with that. So I'm saying that's, that I think was sort of the original intent. But around that now, there's in the portal or other places, some, I'm going to say, big fat lineman comes through there and he goes, okay, this guy's pretty good. The first conversation is, we're going to get you $50,000 from this collective per year, or $100,000. And you're not going to do anything on your own. This is way in addition to what the conference says we can pay you per month, you know, for pizzas. That's,
yeah, because nobody is ever going to hire a big fat lineman to commercials anyway, unless he's got some
personality. Unless he's got some personality. So that's like level three, and then level four is Under Armour or somebody. I keep using them because of Hartman. I saying, okay, let's see. I'm paying Kevin, what he looks like one hell of a high school player. I'm going to pay Kevin $200,000 a year. And I'm Nike or I'm Under Armour or whoever the hell I am. I'm Dick's Sports. But guess what? He's going to go to an Under Armour Nike school. There's no way Nike's going to give the guy a bunch of dough and have him go play at Notre Dame, which is an Under Armour school. So that's like another where they're tied together between, they're not really a collective. Now, they're a separate company that has a marketing thing up and down. Now, if Under Armour gives Notre Dame $10 million a year to be the licensee for Notre Dame products,
yeah, for all their licensed
merchandise. They really don't want them to have a horse bleep team, right? It's in their best interest for the team to be on TV, should be on TV, get a good ratings, all that other kind of crap. So I've got at least four layers of this, and there's probably more.
Yeah, and you know what, that last one, that's been around forever. You remember when the FBI had that big sting that they had going on? One of the things that we learned during that time was that Adidas was one that I remember, is they were paying people to go to Adidas schools.
Yeah,
high school recruits. They were paying them, here's $100,000, because I want University of Louisville, or AKA University 6, I want them to be good. So Bruce Bowen, you're going there.
Well, sometimes I think, Kevin, I know we have our Notre Dame thread. We have a couple of guys, and of course I got one of the guys, the Tripoli, who's a Mr. Sports know-it-all. This is all, it's the exact same thing as it was in the 50s. Bull crap. You can, if I go out and give somebody if he comes off the field and he doesn't do a very good job and a coach gives him a slap on the behind, it's not the same thing as punching him in the nose. I mean, there's a difference. Not saying either coach should be doing either one, but there's a difference in degree. I mean, my cousin went to Colorado, and he said there was an alum guy who he could talk to, and once in a while he got a few bucks from. It's not $1 million, Kevin. It's a whole different, and he couldn't, there was no portal. He couldn't find out what the bid was in Nebraska or Missouri or someplace. It's off the chart different, I think, in my opinion.
I don't think, different's not the right word, it's degree.
Yeah.
It's a new implementation.
Well, I mean,
same old shit.
What's the old joke? Would you make love to me for $10? No. Would you make love to me for $1 million? Well, yeah.
No.
Yeah. Well, no. I would. No. I wouldn't. It would take more. But we've already decided you're selling your services. We're just haggling on the price. I mean.
Yeah. We know what you are now. It's how much?
Yeah. I mean, I don't. I don't. This is so. I have to believe that the first conversation when somebody's name goes in the portal, the first phone call, there's a number on it. At this point. If somebody wants you, you're not there for nothing. And nobody who's a starting lineman on, I'll use Miami, Ohio, and it looks like the kid grew a little bit. He may have been a one-star recruit, and now he's a three, and he realizes it after 2 years, and he goes in the portal, that the number, the Alabama or Notre Dame, I don't know how far deep Notre Dame is in this, but Alabama, Georgia, somebody can say, we want this kid. First thing we say is, hey, come on. By the way, can you give somebody a recruiting trip if they're on scholarship somewhere else?
Yes, absolutely you can once they put their name in that portal.
Okay, so once they're in...
Portal's just a database. It's not,
but you know, it's...
I've said this before. People think it's like this magic place where you walk in and you materialize someplace else.
What do you mean? That's what the commercial says.
I know. I saw the Caleb Williams commercial. But it's really all it is a database. You put your name in. Now it's public knowledge that you intend to transfer.
But
theoretically, the idea behind it was it puts everything above board. that, you know, everybody knows and everybody has the same opportunity to contact players who want to transfer. Of course, there are all kinds of contacts, and then my deal is made, and now I put my name in the portal to just to execute the transaction.
Well, but so you do you absolutely cut the cord with your old school when you put your name in the portal, or can you be invited back?
You can be invited back, but it is at the option and the discretion of the old school.
All right, so how do you think, speculation, you know, maybe Lou will speculate next week, how do you think the conversation goes? Hey, this is Alabama. I hear you want to get out of Miami, Ohio. Or you're already out. You cut the. Where do you want to go? You still want to play football? Well, sure, that's why I'm in the portal. We see you as maybe in the rotation or maybe even a starter at Alabama next year. It looks like you're doing pretty good to me. Now, does that guy from Alabama give him the phone numbers of the people he should talk to for the money, or does he come up with the number?
I'm kind of thinking it's the phone number and the conversation that theoretically doesn't happen that in reality does happen, is that I'll give you the phone number and then the coach is on the phone to whoever's running the collective and saying, here's what I think. Here's how badly I want this guy.
But you have to go.
And remember, Tom, you're talking about kids going to Alabama. It's more likely you're going to get people leaving Alabama.
Well, I just pulled the name off.
They're very high level talents in the first place because they got recruited at Alabama.
Well, what I'm saying is, our offensive linemen are averaging $75,000. I hear. So at least you know that. And here's the phone numbers. Go make your own deal. Do you think it goes like that, or he says, "I'll get you 75"?
Yeah, I can't tell you for sure, Tom. I'd just be speculating. I think there probably are ways because they're not supposed to be doing that. So I am sure there are ways that they can go about doing it without doing it. If that makes any sense.
Well, do they call your marketing guy, not your agent, or do they call you?
I'm sure they call you. That's the first contact.
You think so?
Yeah, well, the first thing you want is, are you even interested? So you'd have to gauge that. Otherwise, you're not going to waste your time.
Yeah, I wonder if somebody doesn't have, you know, calls in this regard or being taken by Lou Michaels. And he's my marketing guy. We used to be called an agent, but we just changed the term.
Well, Lou's probably got the sources who could answer that question.
Yeah. So what after this massive rally yesterday, we're down a little bit today. The guy does a lot of marketing for one of these management companies that I still am somewhat involved with, but not very much. He says that all the people he talks to now are so in, and they have their three or four stocks, a lot of them in the top seven, and they're just all in. There's no cash. And they just think it's going to keep going up just like the last 10 years. They could very well be right, Kevin, but he says nobody wants any protection. They don't want any diversification. They just want their stock, which has performed well for them, and they don't want to hear any sort of concentration issue, any kind of... It's the weird part of it, Kevin, on that is, and I've had a few of these clients in the last few weeks, actually. Virtually all my new clients now have been concentration issues, when I say the last few weeks. And it's one of the things you have to say is, Kevin, you bought, you were a genius, you were lucky, whatever the hell it was. You got the right tips, they're all over the place. You bought, you know, 1,000 shares of NVIDIA when it was, you know, 80. Then it went to like a 1,000. No, now you got 10,000 and it's, you know, and it's, whatever, and it's all in the same stock. Well, yeah, what's the problem with that? I said, well, when you bought it, you were still working. It was $80,000 out of a, you know, $3 million portfolio, or two and a half, whatever the number was. Now it's, whatever the number is, it's 90% because you sold some of the other stuff and bought that NVIDIA with that. Now it's 95% of a portfolio, and by the way, you're not working anymore. You're 15 years older. Why should that make any difference? Well, you know, maybe it doesn't. Maybe you're going to be like the wake I went to last night where the guy was 93 and he was sick 2 days. I mean, I guess that's everybody's dream, but it doesn't always work that way. These conversations are real hard to have, Kevin, but we have a massive generation of believers. And I would be a believer, too, except I saw this in 2000. You couldn't get people out of Oracle. You couldn't get people out of Cisco or Intel or those places. Now, Microsoft, even though he had a dead decade, if you hung on, he'd have been okay. But Microsoft traded $35 for, you know, at least 10 years. I mean, I don't know. You don't want people to lose this money they've made, Kevin. And yet, I think if we ever do turn, everybody set themselves up to lose everything they've made. And you don't have to do that. Just saying. Okay. I don't know if you'd be a...
Are you looking for a comment on that?
I'm just... It is just a rough conversation to have. You know, it's just... and yet... You know you're right. You also know the person has done very well in something. They have this loyalty. One thing about it being a trader, you have zero loyalty towards a company because they don't have any loyalty towards you. I've seen some go up, some go down, and one thing's for sure is none of those guys is going to be at my wake, you know, type of thing. I mean, you can have a huge bull run or big run in Apple or Nvidia or some other place. And forget about the ones. Where the Sears, the Uniteds, where people had just as much loyalty and came away with nothing, you know. But the idea that you care about, it's just an investment, Kevin. It's all it is. I mean, if it's a house and you ended up remodeling it yourself and did all the work and you got a lot of sweat equity in it, that I can understand to where you can say, I really don't want to sell it because it's kind of my place. But you shouldn't feel that way about a stock, I don't think. But people do. And I wouldn't care if it all of a sudden someday it's going to be a problem with them. I mean, look at the believers in Bitcoin. I believe. I can't ever get rid of it. I believe. Well, is it a good investment? Is it? What is it? Is it? If it was a great, you know, I'll use the term shot, lark, thought at 3,000, is it really that at 60? One of the clients came in a few weeks ago. I said, they had all their money in one stack. I said, well, if I gave you $1 million today, would you say before lunch, buy me $1 million a stack, use every single penny? The person said, well, hell no. I said, well, that's what you got. You know, it's these conversations shouldn't be that difficult, Kevin, but they really are. Now, I guess if I said, oh, well, so what? Throw it here. I'll pay me a percentage, and I'll watch it while I'm golfing. I guess I could do that, and I'd be more popular, but I can't do that. It's just weird. Everything you talk about is difficult, right? And especially in this kind of world, it's a little weird. But anyway, so what's going on in the class stuff? I mean, I think I hear what Russell's thinking of doing. There's a group on Wednesdays that meets 15 minutes before class, a couple other professors and a few of the graduate students, to talk about the market. And he said, what if I... he asked those guys, by the way, would you come in 15 minutes earlier, which would be the last half hour of the Wednesday show, and would you want to be on live with Stocks and Jacks with any investment questions you have and the stuff that we're talking about on the air? And evidently the group is all for it. That'll be pretty cool, won't it?
Yeah, I think so.
I might even have you in there a couple times for that because I think you have a certain feel for some of this stuff that I don't have. My whole goal with all the guys we have here is for us, between all of us, we have the answers to everything. I'll quite get there, but... We're a pretty good group, so I think that'll be kind of fun.
You know, we have to do more group stuff, too. The half-hour overlap with Russell that I had last time was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was partly because we got on late, and, you know, and that's just the way it worked out. But you know what? What we really need to plan is we need to plan some kind of an event where we get everybody in the same place at the same time, and you know, almost like a panel, but stick us all up on stage, and then let listeners come and fire at us and see what they want to hear.
Are we like the Talking Heads, all in shorts and like a suit coat and stuff?
Yeah, something like No, everybody look rubby.
Yeah,
but we could do that, and then if, you know, especially if there were some beer involved, we'd be fine.
Oh God! All right, we're gonna dash over to Carl, Kevin. Thank you very much, Carl's probably just with us. We probably won't even go to break. Carl, you with us? No,
Carl's always with us on Fridays. He's with us right off the bat.
He says if he doesn't get to wear shorts, he's not coming.
Oh, no. I sweatpants.
Well, there you go.
That's, you know, because I when I used to do hits, the time I lived in Florida, that was when we still did satellite shots because, you know, this was before Zoom, before all the, you know, all the crazy. Zoom was a dream in people's eye, right? So when someone wanted you on the air, you had to get in a car and go where there was a studio. Well, of course, they only shoot the top half of your body.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, so whatever you have on below the waist, nobody sees. It could be literally nothing.
Yeah, well, I was about to say, Carl, as long as you wear pants, I don't care what kind they are.
Yes. Well, you know, when Liz Claman, she's still on... is she on Fox?
Whatever the hell she's
business,
in. Yeah.
But she was on CNBC for a long time. And I thought she was terrific. But she... One day, the cameraman made an oopsie. I mean, she wasn't, like, naked or anything. But she had the beautiful, you know, the blue blazer and the whole stuff on top and looked very, very professionally. Kind of swung to the side. She's got this red skirt on. Did not match. I think she was pretty pissed at the dude. It wasn't like, you know, she was wearing, like, bikinis or anything like that. But obviously she wasn't dressed. All my judges, those guys all have white shirt and tie and sport coat and blue jeans. Put the robes on and out they go.
Well, Scarborough used to do his hits from the same studio I did those ones in. It was back in the 07, 08 time frame. And he was infamous for sure. Yeah, because you chat up the cameraman, right? I mean, what else are you going to do when you're waiting?
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's the guy pointing the big, you know, the great big TV camera thing at you. And he said, oh, yeah, he's in here. You know, this is the studio he does the hits from, and he's got a suit coat on. Certainly doesn't below the waist.
Well, you know, Kevin, if you want to hang a minute, I got a quick story about how sometimes things that you hear on TV you don't think affect you, maybe actually did affect you. When we first started the show, and even before that, when Jan and I were on the Score, years and years ago, to go to a studio, to go to another station. There was something called, the best one was a Telos box, and you paid a fortune for this thing. And it would take, you needed two lines or what? Those are the ISDN lines, right, guys?
So you had a back feed that was the audio, and that was frequently on a dial-up line.
Well, no, but what this did... It was a dual line. It was like a DSL, but it was a double. It was ISDN.
Right, yeah, it's ISDN, yeah.
Yeah, so what this machine did was take analog, which all these microphones and stuff are, and make everything digital, and then spit it to the line.
Right.
And it was so friggin' clear. I mean, when it clicked on in the other studio, you'd swear you were there. I mean, the internet's pretty damn good, but this was better. And this is how you went to every station in the country. That's when we used to... If we were to do a, Jan and I would do a something in Arizona or something. Maddie Weber would come in. They'd give you the phone number. You'd click into the machine, click, and it was just like you were there.
Well, right. We had digital equipment that ran on that stuff. So yeah.
So the AT&T decides they don't want any more of this stuff, even though they're not like the only provider. Now in Denver, they sold all their old copper stuff to Frontier. And they said, okay, we want out, but we're going to let somebody else in. In Illinois, they're not going to do that, all right? They're just going to raise the prices until you gag. So
right.
the last few months, we were paying $650 a month to go from our office, for lack of a better term, to the alley. Because once we hit the main line, we actually used Sprint to get from the back of the building to wherever else we went. And we would be on 2-4, well, we would be on... 2 hours a day, 20 days a month, around like 40, 50, 60 hours. And our bill from Sprint was $150, and AT&T was $650 to get to the alley.
Oh,
it got crazy. But here's the thing. I'm arguing with them, and they go, well, the state approved it. Sure enough, I look on the state, whatever, what do they call
tariffs.
It?
Tariffs.
And it's ISDN hookup Chicago, like $650. And you sit there, how the bleep So all of a sudden now, this AT&T guy who just got the thing got dismissed yesterday is being tried for giving money to Madigan for rate increases for AT&T. And I'm thinking, did that son of a bitch, was that what put us out of the ISDN business?
Oh, Chief.
I bet it's the same guy.
Right. Well, there was one of the things that made the internet interesting during the 90s was that we had the ability to access, when we got into downtown, we could get onto MFS DataNet and also TCG and get away from the Ameritech tariffs. And well, that was a huge part of the game because the corruption, by the way, within the ICC is unbelievable in Illinois. Oh my God!
Well, nobody had the right to come into the building except for AT&T. So they
we did. That was the thing, was we had fiber access because that was the dirty little secret about what was really running down those steam tunnels that caused the flood.
Right, but I think ISDN was copper.
I said, well, it so it is and it isn't. All right, yes, it is. It runs on copper. But we had service available if you wanted to buy it. The thing is that by the time we got into the 90s and we started doing this, it was essentially the usage charge was essentially the same as a phone call, provided you had the right equipment.
Well, like I said, they charged us four times as much to go to the alley as Sprint did to actually take us everywhere we wanted to go for 80 hours a month.
Oh no, these guys were the Ameritech thing was especially egregious because once you got beyond a 7 mile central office to central office, it was a nickel per channel per minute.
Yeah, wow.
So that was, for both channels up, that was a dime a minute.
Well, even if something, they'd sign you up in your house and they'd go, locals all included, long distance is, whatever, a penny a minute or some crap. All of a sudden, like, my first call was like to Audrey. Well, she's in the suburb. Well, that was like $8. I go, whoa.
Right, exactly. Well, yeah, that was the, and one of the reasons that we loved the CLEX was that we could have virtual numbers that were in all the different offices, and therefore you wouldn't get screwed like this, but you had to make sure you dialed the right one. Okay, because if you called, we had like 150 numbers all around the Chicagoland area, and they all came to the same equipment downtown.
Okay.
But the whole deal was you as the customer had to choose which one you dialed, because if you called the wrong one, you were going to get reamed at the end of the month. And so, and there was nothing we could do about that. We could, we could intercept it and say, well, hey, idiot, you should be calling this one. There was no way that we could police that up for the customer. They had to do it because we could not get an accurate central office mapping table. So even though we had caller ID on every call, we refused. We wouldn't take the liability for being wrong because it could be thousands of dollars. All right, and they would not give us a table that would allow us to know that it was right and take liability for it if it wasn't. So basically we published this huge list and you had to figure out which one you were going to use. And, if you had one in the same exchange, then it was easy. But, but if not, then, maybe not so much. By the way, I have a question for you. What was the unemployment rate in September of 2007?
You're going to have that, not me, because September of 2007, right before all that stuff happened, I'm going to say in the threes.
No, it was 4.7%.
Okay.
And by the way, it had been stable for well over a year, bouncing around between 4.7 and 4.4. Okay. What did the Fed do in September of 2007?
I'm trying to think. When did they actually pour all the money in for the stuff? Was it 7 or 8?
It's 2007 in September, their September meeting. They cut rates by 50 basis points, despite there being no indication of a problem in the
unemployment. Well, but you and I also know the unemployment rate is not the one we would look at. But
I know this. Okay, right. Well, by the way, the employment population ratio, the one I like to look at, was stable as well. Okay, it wasn't moving much. 2007, they cut rates by 50 basis points. This at the same time that Ben Bernanke was running around telling everybody that there was no basic problem. The subprime was no big deal. It was just two little hedge funds that blew up in the summer. There was nothing to worry about. The economy was fine. By the way, exactly how long after that was it that the market topped?
Couldn't have been very long. That's
about
one
a month.
If you were to listen, now you just hit upon a sore subject a little bit, Carl, because out of all the, you've been in business a long time, there are mistakes, there are tells. Is that the term they use in poker? There are tells that you don't pick up on. And that was one of the tells that I didn't pick up on. I mean, I do a lot of, not all the managed, but a lot of the managed money for the firm. My brother Dan has a lot of clients that do a lot of their, mostly all their own stuff. And then they have him do some, anyway, we just have a little bit of a difference in the people that we, not that we don't know each other's people. I mean, we do, but one of his guys is a big investor, and we have some of his stuff, and we've done, interesting stuff for the guy for the years. Good guy. He had a seven-figure loss in one of these Bear Stearns funds, I'm going to say 6 months before any of this stuff happened. And I was kind of looking at everything getting a little weird looking, Carl, but I never dug in enough to realize that this was an off-balance sheet fund that Bear Stearns had. I mean, it wasn't my business, so Dan knows him way more than I do, so I wasn't going to call a guy up and say, hey, Joe, his name's not Joe. Hey, Joe, hey, what the hell happened? It would have been very inappropriate. I just never did. But it turns out, as bits and pieces came in, it was like an Enron sort of off-balance sheet thing that Bear Stearns was running.
Right.
And if I would have sat down and looked in the mirror for a half hour and said, self, how many of these are there? This can't be the only one. How many of these are there? How does somebody who's a Bear Stearns investor drop seven figures and nobody kind of even know about it? Is this the canary in the coal mine, or is it just a one-off? I never pursued it. And I don't, I'm not alone. I mean, how many people were a lot closer to Bear Stearns than me? But it just seemed to me, it seemed really odd, Carl. And I never pursued it, partly because I don't get into my clients' business. That's their business. But it was a tell. And I let it slip, basically.
Let me give you a couple more little pieces, okay? Because people have gotten more sophisticated. They always do over time, right? I mean, you have a particular thing that goes wrong. And there's always some backstory of grift somewhere that's involved in all of these things when they go bad, right? I mean, it's, the idea that all these off-balance sheet things, don't ever get consolidated. Don't ever be a problem with that. That's never going to be an issue. Well, back around this time, Congress did a very interesting thing. They decided that there was going to be a issue with people suing the government. Because, sometimes people sue the government, right?
Probably for all the right reasons.
Well, yeah, usually when people sue the government, they got a reason to sue the government, right?
Because for some lawyer to take that case, he must have a pretty strong one.
Well, I'm just saying, okay? Yeah. But in the late 1970s, this is how far back this goes. This is Jimmy Carter stuff. Congress passed a law that said that any significant suit. Now, it used to be that there was a $100,000 cap. Of course, in the 1970s, $100,000 a lot more money than it is today. But they pulled this cap off and said that the Justice Department was able to basically handle these kinds of settlements all on its own. The problem is, and Treasury runs this, by the way, this fund. You can't FOIA this stuff because the settlements are confidential. Even the people who get paid are confidential. The amount of fees that the attorneys siphon off in the middle of it is confidential. So this is essentially a a formal legal slush fund for anybody that goes after the government and the government decides to hand out the money instead of fight it. Instead of go to court and figure out, all right, you know, is this is legitimate? Is it not legitimate? Whatever. Now, you'd say, well, you know, gee, maybe there's some, you know, there's some changes with this that, you know, that we ought to be doing. Okay. In 2009, guess who took over that part of the Treasury and Justice Department?
I would have no idea, but hopefully you'll tell me.
His name was Tony West.
Tony West. Why does that name ring a bell in Rogues Gallery or something?
It's, who is Tony West? Well, you know, you might want to look at that.
Ricky, if you can, how about pulling Carl's volume up here?
You might want to look at who Tony West is. Tony West, by the way, is one of the people that funded a $2 billion bailout and fund. Remember the Volkswagen cheating thing with emissions?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Congress had rejected this. This was related to the to Volkswagen electric car.
No, it was the diesels.
Right, but part of the deal was that the White House wanted electric cars, right? This was the start of the craziness with this. And Congress had rejected putting that money into the company. Well, guess what? It got paid through that fund. Okay. Now, this was after Congress had explicitly said no. You might want to look at who's Tony West.
Where is he now?
He's Kamala's brother-in-law.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's married to Maya Harris.
Yep. Married to his sister. By the way, he's still there, and he's still running this. And if you look at the amount of money that has been thrown out there, just in the last couple of years, in 2021, $1 billion settlement from illegal immigrants that claimed emotional distress, not actual harm, emotional distress, was scotched. It's one of the few that has been killed that was going through this structure.
Well, then isn't like some guy who was in the 2008 mortgage stuff, isn't the guy who was name was all over that never really got convicted? Isn't he messing around with doing stuff with NVIDIA stock now or something?
Oh yeah, there's all kinds of fun stuff like this. But by the way, Harris, there is a whistleblower affidavit that says that there were prohibited subjects in the debate for the questions for the ABC News. All right. Guess what one of them was?
Oh, about this guy? Probably.
Tony Harris. Right.
Well, I wouldn't ask the question. I didn't know who the hell he was, but it doesn't surprise me that there are people like that.
By the way, the New York Post has published an article on this. But it's not exactly a secret. How come it isn't all over the media? What? I mean, you would think that having your brother-in-law as the guardian of a essentially unlimited slush fund, I mean, it's, after all, it's inside the Treasury Department.
If people would pay 50 cents for a newspaper every day and keep the newspaper independent, it might be. It's not going to happen now.
Well, you're right. And the thing is, though, is that when you get down to it, Chief, all this stuff comes down to one thing. And you know, there was another article that was out recently that focused on some of the abuses in international adoptions. Okay? Kids who 30 years ago, okay, so I mean, this has nothing to do with the current administration, right? Because, you know, 30 years ago, they weren't around. 30 years ago, were told, you know, basically that, you know, their families couldn't take care of them, they were abandoned, you know, blah, blah, blah. That was a lie. those children were sold.
Sure they were.
Okay. And oh, by the way, we have plenty of people
in
our
political... If people buy them, why do they think they're not sold? Duh.
Well, hello, yeah. Right. All right, so what's really going on here? What is the deal with Ozempic? What is the deal with all of these different things? They all come down to two words.
They come down to power and influence.
No. You know how you stop this? You start using these two words, the two words that no one's using. And I figured out a two-word way to describe all of this stuff. It's the illegal immigration stuff, the Haitians in Ohio, okay, with allegedly the mayor owning a bunch of property, then he lobbies for the government to put these people in here who have $700 rent subsidies, right, which is, I mean, that's insane.
But Carl, before you, I mean, I know this is kind of a common topic, but I have a question for you. I mean, because Lou actually spoke to it, not this week, but last week, and, you know, in only Lou's way, is we collectively have the ability, and people... At the end of the day, I've always thought that if you were in power, if you were the government, even if you never really wanted to do it, you always could raise the power up to defeat even the biggest crook. That doesn't appear to be the way it is anymore. I mean, what you're talking about, and this, I know I do this, you know, maybe as a habit forming. It's not a single subject. This is a subject you're very concerned about, and I am too, by the way, and
well,
I trust
well,
so,
I mean,
but it's no different than the guy who blew through the stop sign yesterday and almost killed me. I mean,
right.
The fact is there is no but you know, Lou's point is if we wanted to, we could.
Right.
We could put a speed camera on the Dan Ryan, or several of them. I'm not for them, you know, blah, 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 but we don't have any police there. And anybody who's over $100, you show up in his driveway with a tow truck and you take the car, or 100 miles per hour. Or anybody who's over 85, you send them a $500 ticket. And we don't care if it's your brother-in-law driving it, whatever, it's your frigging car. We have the ability to stop this in a week. We have the ability to stop the money crap going to the wrong people on the border, in Ohio, in the streets of Chicago. The immigrants here look to me like... They're in the Home Depot parking lot. Don't they realize it's costing $50,000 a month to keep them? If they were getting $50,000 a month, they wouldn't be in a Home Depot parking lot. I mean, right? Looking for a job. So it's this. Why all of a sudden has, as I've used this before, my uncle said, back in the day, the graft level was acceptable. The graft was 5%. I'm going to say now the graft is 25%, maybe more than that with some of these big companies. And the hospitalizations, crap, it's got to be 50. Why all of a sudden, when people like my uncle, just a regular old schmo, said the acceptable level is 5, why now do people say, hey, 50 is okay as long as I got insurance or something? Well, why all of a sudden we have changed? What you're talking about is absolutely true. I'm never going to disagree with you that should we enforce an antitrust law? Should somebody pay $1,000 for a drug to cost somebody $5? But somehow or another, collectively, we have decided it's okay. And if you and I ran on a ticket, and we're going to, if we put 25 of these people in jail tomorrow, we'd be run out of office. What are you doing? I have stock in that firm. You just, you know, I have this, I have that.
Oh, I know.
We don't. I mean, there is no collective will to do anything that you and I want to do. there just isn't.
But here's the basic problem with all of it, Chief. All right, you know, I mean, we've gone from 4% of GDP in healthcare in 1970-ish to, you know, 21% today, right? The majority, and yet, you would think with a 5x expansion that we would have the best lifespan, the best health outcomes. Everybody would be walking around fit as a fiddle, and you know, absolutely nothing wrong with them. And of course, that's not the case. 60% of American adults are on multiple medications and have chronic disease.
Well, we got to dash here for a break here, Carl, but I want to kick up this Three Mile Island. But you don't,
talk about the Three Mile Island.
But you and I are on absolutely. There's a dude in a building here, been a friend of mine forever. One of the guys who, you know, I use the term building engineers or whatever. Guy has no insurance, and now he's got diabetes, and and but now he's got some nasty ass case of shingles, which can't be good with diabetes. And he's got nowhere to go. He's got a doctor that he went when the guy didn't know what he was doing. Now, if you go to an emergency care facility, no insurance, I don't know if they let you in. The money in the system is dramatic. The care is getting worse by the day, I think.
Well, it's because it's all being stolen.
Yeah. But how about why? But why?
The problem.
But why? You know, we're not even. I'm saying we're not taking the fatso drug, right? And yet we read this article, and I can't believe the lady was allowed to publish it in CNBC. About how she didn't say it cost $5 to make it. She said at $5 you could make a profit, which means right. It probably costs $2. So it's going for $1,000. Now you would think if people read anything, we probably know, even though maybe they're not telling us. I'll bet we know 10 people that are paying the grand every month. Why don't they look at that article and say, what the bleep? We're ragging about it, and we're not even at it. But the people who are on it don't seem to care. Well, I mean,
Because they're not paying it. It's so-called insurance.
Ah. S&P futures down 9, NASDAQ futures down 39. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stocksandjocks@live.com.
Loading up back Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP futures down 8. We're creeping back up here. Buy the dip. NASDAQ futures down 33. Never thought that would actually be a market motivation. Buy the dip, but it sure has been for a long time. Dow futures up 15. And one stock, whack. Federal Express missed on earnings bad. It's down $40, down 13%, trading 260. So that's a big no-no in the transportation average. Over in Asia, these guys were following through on our big rally yesterday, so they're all to the moon, Alice. Nikkei up 568, 1.5%. Hang Seng up 245, 1.4. Shanghai, however, on their best of days, is up 79 cents, so one change. So I think maybe Carl will comment on this. I'm a little bit worried of the depth of the Chinese issue, not because I'm more that worried about them, but I think it's going to affect us at some level. I hope not, but I don't see how it won't. DAX down 122.6%. FTSE down 69.8%. Crack around down 56.7%. Now those guys are a little bit lower. The central bank decisions, they didn't all follow us. I mean, we're the only ones that are on the limb on this cutting stuff here. But yesterday, yes. Dow down up 522, S&P up 95, NASDAQ up 440, 2.5%, 440, that's unreal. Bonds, this is weird. We had the 10-year down a point today, but it's been up since the announcement. We're up to 372 on the 10-year. The Bund unchanged at 220, Japan down a basis point, 0.84. Oil down 30 cents, 71.65. Brent down 41 cents, 74.47. So oil is not an issue anywhere in this inflation thing. It's been as low as 67, but it's still on the very low end of this range it's had for a while. Natural gas up 2 cents, 237. RBOB down a penny, 204. Gold continues to move up another $28, 26.43. This is pretty odd. Actually, spot gold has gone past 2,600 for the first time ever. Silver up 31 cents, 31.74. Copper up 2 cents, 4.36. And I am happy to report that a lot of my clients are in gold and gold miners and silver, and it's been a really nice couple of weeks. FX, the euro is 111.7, so the dollar's down just a hair again. Pound's up to 133, so a lot of this stuff, but the hike in the interest rates is causing lowering interest rates is causing the dollar to go down a little bit. Japan, 143.92, they're actually down, so they're the other way. Crypto, up $72, 63,453, so way high in the crypto. Ricky, we got our first traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:33 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 69 degrees right now with a high of 85 degrees. Partly sunny, warm, and humid with a thunderstorm in spots into the early afternoon. Tonight's going to be mainly clear with a low of 68 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 77 degrees right now with a high of 95. Mostly sunny, and tonight will be clear with a low of 70 degrees. Pretty nice for Arizona standards, really. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe, 36 minutes. We're looking at 62 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lynn Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wall, 52 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 13 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 33 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday, the Diamondbacks beat the Brewers 5-1, and the Cubs beat the Nationals 7-6. Today, we got back-to-back games for the Cubs and the Diamondbacks. Cubs play the Nationals at 1:20 p.m. Diamondbacks play the Brewers at 7:10 p.m. And the White Sox play the Padres at 8:40 p.m. MLB, the Patriots play the Jets at 7:15 p.m. And this Sunday, at September 22nd, the Bears play the Colts at 12 p.m. And the Cardinals play the Lions at 7:25 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
The Carla, before we get to the Three Mile Island thing, I wanted to ask your opinion on what my bro and I were talking about yesterday. And Dan says to me, how come everybody on TV now is convinced that the inflation rate going forward should be the actual interest rate? He goes, doesn't that mean you're not making any money? I said, yeah, it does.
Well, yeah.
But I mean, you know, Dan's, he knew the answer. But he said, why all of a sudden is this popular acclaim that it all of a sudden, no, if inflation's 2.5 years, you're supposed to be, getting 2.5. Shouldn't you be getting something plus the inflation? How do you, same problem as before we went to break. How do you get this collective big lie? It's instilled in people and you keep talking about it people are convinced credit card rates should be 22 and banks should be, you should get nothing at the bank. I mean, how did we ever educate people this way, for lack of a better term?
Chief, I have no idea, but I'll tell you, one of the more insane things that I've heard in the last couple of days, this is vote buying season, right? So we all politicians make promises that have zero chance of actually being within their wheelhouse. They're not things they can do. All right. And the latest one out of Trump, which, yeah, I mean, we've all heard the $25,000 out of Harris for new home buyers and this and that. They grab back. Latest one on Trump is a cap of 10% interest on credit cards.
I'd love it. I'd probably say 12.
Well, okay. But you know what would happen if you did that, right?
I wouldn't. Yeah, I do. And I wouldn't. I'd roll with it.
Well, I'd still have credit cards. You'd still have credit cards, I assume.
Yeah.
Probably. All right. How about the average schlub that currently is running a $7,000 balance?
I don't think they need to be paying 22.
Yeah, but how about if they can't pay 22 when they're running when they have $7,000 in balance and they're making $30,000 a year? Okay, in other words, they're functionally bankrupt, right now.
Well, you're gonna accelerate that by 22 instead of 12.
Well, I understand that, but they're not gonna have a credit card at 12.
Okay. So you'd rather
their line is going to get instantly slammed down to their available to whatever their balance is, which, by the way, happened during the 07-08 time frame several times to people. Their line is going to get slammed down to that number. They're not going to have any additional available credit available.
How come,
at all?
How come I have a credit card through a credit union at 7.9%, and they're not going broke?
Credit card at a
big credit union, I think it's 7.9 or 8.9.
Yeah, well, because you probably have an 800 credit score.
I bet the rest of the people in the credit union do not.
I bet the rest of the people in the credit union aren't paying 8%.
I'm saying, but they would find a way. 2022 is. Let's put it this way: Nancy talked about a person that she had too many credit cards, but she managed to get him a loan. And said, you can't open any more credit cards. The guy opens a credit card, borrows $1,000, his rate's 32.
Right.
Now, I don't think the mafia charged that much.
If they said
you shouldn't have a credit card, I'd rather have them say that than say, we'll loan you $1,000 for 32%. I'd rather them say that.
Chief, I am not in any way arguing that what they're doing is is appropriate, legitimate, any of those things. Okay? What I am saying is that if you do this, what's now, you know, I think we ought to do it because I think there's a serious problem out there with essentially, and this goes back to what I, the two words that I didn't get to use before we went to break, but I said that all of these problems can be boiled down to two words, okay? The two words are human farming.
Yeah.
And if we were to use those two words on a concerted basis, every time one of these kinds of abuses came up, regardless of what it was, all right, whether it's illegal immigration and the mayor owning a bunch of rental properties that he loves the $700 per person subsidy.
Oh, yeah.
Because he gets to make three times as much dough. And by the way, he also screws everybody in town, all right, that is renting a house. Okay? He doesn't care about screwing all the people in town. What he cares about is...
Carl, nobody, how many people other than, let's say, everybody listens to the show, but I mean, how many people in today's education are capable of you lobbing them? This is what, God, this is what I used to hate about grad school. They'd give you these stupid tests where they'd say, okay, Milton Friedman would give you a New York or a Times article and say, okay, if that happened, if this policy went through, trace the winners and losers for the next two generations or something. I'm sitting there going, holy bleep, I got to write. It's hard to do, and most people don't care to do it, especially if you're a politician. All you care about is the next 2 years. And I know. And we're absolutely paying the price for that.
Yes, we are.
But now you've got everybody so befuddled. And I mean, just like I mentioned earlier to Kevin, I'm sorry to repeat, but one of my buddies from the Fed, I wish you were here that night. And I said, why don't I'd lower these rates. Most, you know, I'm sure it's probably changed now, Carol, but I believe that the usury rate in Illinois was 12 or 15, somewhere in there.
Right.
And which somebody might be dumb enough to think, gee, I can't charge interest more than, let's say, 15 in Illinois. Oh, no.
Right.
Oh, no. But no, I'm a bank in Illinois. And I'm saying, well, John, this looks like a law. And somebody slithers in like a snake and puts his head up and he goes, hey, chief, you're so dumb. You think you can't charge more than 15%. Well, what do you mean? The law says 15. Oh, no. We're gonna put a branch of Chief Bank, Chief and Carl Bank, out in our credit card processing facility. We're going to put in Montana, and they have no such law.
They have no, right.
And we're going to send the bills from there, and we're going to charge 25. And I'm going to say, wait a minute, we're still in Illinois. How am I going to pull that off? Oh, we're just going to do it and see what happens.
Do you know what the problem with that is? You probably do understand it, but most people don't. Interstate commerce is exclusively the purview of the federal government.
Well, and the Supreme Court ruled that way.
And the branch banking law is what made this abuse possible, right? That's where this came from. That's why all these places put their, you know, their offices in North Dakota or South Dakota or wherever it is.
North Dakota and South Carolina. What percentage of the population gets their credit card North Dakota and South Carolina and says, gee, I wonder why I'm getting it from there. Duh. Right.
Well, but here's the thing. I mean, this is, you know, this is all true. Okay? This is all absolutely true. However, the problem is that doesn't override the fact that interstate commerce is exclusively regulated by the federal government. So the federal government...
Except for baseball.
Well, yeah, because they have a specific antitrust exemption. But the federal government absolutely could stomp on this if they wanted to, but they don't.
Well, actually, they don't. That was a Supreme Court decision.
But this is the thing, is that, I mean, there's... because Congress passed interstate branch banking. They could revoke it.
Well,
or limit it. And say
it overrides the Illinois usury law, which I thought was pretty bizarre.
Well, that's because it's interstate commerce.
I get it.
Okay, I mean that's the reason, is because it's interstate commerce. But Congress has the exclusive authority to regulate interstate commerce.
Well, get back to what I want your opinion on what I asked Kevin earlier, because I had asked one of my Fed guys. He was actually on the show once. He says, yeah, do you have any idea? I said, you know, we should, what about our usury laws? Same conversation, you know, years ago. Oh, man, do you have any idea how much these guys write off on these loans? I go, okay, somebody gets a credit card, they see the 20-some percent. Most people, I think most people, I hope everybody's not some dunderhead, most people will say, I don't care, I'm never going to carry a balance. And all of a sudden, I guess there are people who go out and buy the boat or $10,000 worth of furniture and just lob it on there at 22%. I hope there's not too many, but there are some. But most people, all of a sudden, it's a... I read once, Carl, that 80% of all bankruptcies on credit cards have to do with some medical event. Maybe not 87, but it's a big number of them.
Yeah, it's a huge... Well, personal bankruptcies in general, a very substantial part of them are medical.
And so that goes on the credit card. It's now 20-some percent, maybe higher. And well, not too much higher. And all of a sudden, I miss a payment. Somebody gets laid off. All of a sudden, you miss a payment. That's, you know, some dollars. All of a sudden, the rate goes from 22 to 25 because I can't pay 22. Anybody with a brain says, well, I should be able to pay 25, right? So they'll do that. And then it's 28. And all of a sudden, after 2 or 3 years, the balance is three times what my original bill was. So I asked my buddy, I said, well, you know, if you took those write-offs and you zeroed down to what the original number was, what do you think the write-offs would look like? And he goes, well, you got me there. They'd be a lot less. I said, you can't charge somebody 25% interest when you know they can't pay it and then say, oh, by the way, we wrote off to 25%. I mean,
right.
It was never there in the first place.
Right. But see, when you look at all the different elements of, you know, of the craziness that have gone on over, and the thing about grift, and you've lived in Chicago for a long time. I lived in Chicago for a long time.
It's worse now than it was when I was growing up. There was always a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. But why is it worse? Because if I can steal, which is what it is.
Yeah.
If I can steal, then when you start basing parts of the economy on being able to steal, it's like any other business. This last quarter, I made $1 million. Next quarter, I have to do better than $1 million, right? Otherwise, my stock goes down.
Yeah.
Okay. So I stole $1 million. Now I got to steal $1,000,001. The next quarter, I need to steal $1,000,002.
As we used to say on the trading floor, Carl, you can never get to the point where if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
Well, the thing is this. If I'm actually advancing the you know, better, faster, cheaper, pick any two, if I'm actually doing that, right, then the fact that I go from $1 million to $1,000,001 to $1,000,002, I have more employees, they're making more money, you know, they all got raises, I'm putting out a better product, the customer likes what I'm selling, it's cheaper for him, he's getting more value. Everybody loves that. That's the virtuous cycle that we all hear about in the business world, right? That we all do good things, human innovation, productivity advancement. These are all to the benefit of everyone. And oh, by the way, your stock price goes up. There's nothing wrong with any of that. That's capitalism. That's how it's supposed to work.
Well, there's always. I mean, I guess there's. You can't get.
Chief, there's always an element of theft in everywhere, right? There's always the guy that will steal your car.
Right? Well, no doubt. I'm talking about, you know, the little stuff. The guy that you know, takes care of the alderman's campaign, so he may get a contract that you maybe could have got, but it's 5% more.
Right.
Or somebody's brother-in-law gets a contract, and you know he's not out there working. You could have done it in 2 weeks, and it takes him 6 weeks. There's always that stuff. It's sort of human nature. It's perplexing and it's aggravating, but it's not the same as somebody orchestrating something for like three times what it ought to be, or like the stuff you guys have been talking about in Ohio and some of the stuff in Katrina where there were four subcontractors on one contract.
Chief, all of this, there's $700 million that has gone into a handful of NGOs over the last 3 years.
Well, the guys
down by the border bringing in these illegals.
And they're paying themselves $1 million
plus
and by the way, less than half of that actually went into the pockets that were onto the, shoes. That's of those people.
That's kind of the, you know, my we got to stop this and go to the Fremont Island in a second. But my friend Robin, who's a big time contributor to the show, the one who got killed in the traffic accident earlier, the last day of last year, actually. She was a charitable lady, and she was in. Well, I'll tell a quick story because I'm starting to talk about people. She was in the Big Sister program. Remember that? I mean, I'm sure it's still around. And she had this young African American kid, and you were supposed to do stuff with him, but you weren't always supposed to take him to a nice place because that screws the family. Whatever. She obeyed all the rules, and one of the things they did was take these kids to a, what do you call it when a guy gets up, gives everybody the rah-rah speech? What do you call those things?
It was motivational speaker things.
Well, guess who the speaker was? It was O.J. Simpson.
Oh,
he said he was unbelievable. These kids were tearing up in the place. He's a big man. Boy, talk about a presence. I mean, very articulate. You know, who the hell knows what happened, but after whatever happened to him, but the but she then wanted to get on the board of one of these non for profits, the stuff that do gooder kind of places, and she went down the list, and it's this stuff's published, I think, Carl. There were places, I'm going to say, I could be wrong on this one, but I'll lie, but it was one of like the March of Dimes or this one or that one. Only 40 or 45% of the dough made it to where it was supposed to go. And there were some in the 50s, some in the 60s. She went through this massive list. She ended up on the Chicago Food Depository Board because 95% of what they take in went out.
Well, most of, one of the things, what's it called? Charity Navigator, I think.
You can find out. I mean,
well, that's the thing, because the 990s are public, which is the tax return for nonprofits. And they don't have to pay taxes, but they have to file these things with the IRS. And those are public documents. They're not secret. You can't keep them secret. And there's two things that, one of them is obviously you find the expense ratios and you find, stupid stuff like, 5% actually goes to whatever they're
paying. Yeah, some are really bad.
Right. But then the other one, the other big red flag is any so-called charitable organization that continually files those things late. And most of them do.
You mean like not a week late, a couple years late?
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, like extension here, extension there, and then 9 months later, there it is. Any organization that's doing that is trying to find some way to hide something. There's no reason. I mean, because any organization of any size has enough accounting resources to actually have that data. Come on, man. The fiscal year closes, and if you can't have it out in a month, you're playing games somewhere. I'm not saying it's illegal. I'm saying you're playing games. You're trying to find some way to recategorize things and move things around within the rules because you don't like what the data says.
All right, so shift gears. Clutch in.
All right.
How the hell did Microsoft buy Three Mile Island or whatever the hell they're doing?
God. There's a couple of problems here that come with this kind of thing.
Three Mile Island, give the background. One of them was bad, but there's a couple others that didn't go, right? It was three reactors totally in the original?
Yeah, and actually, none of them were really bad. It was a screw-up, but there was no radiation release. There was a meltdown within the unit, but it was contained, which is how it's supposed to work when things break. It did, okay? But it was... That was the seminal thing that basically killed the breathless journalists were all over it. We're all going to die. Well, nobody died.
It's going to go to the center of the earth and blow the earth up, the usual crap.
Right. And of course, none of that happened. Okay. But that was a big part of the reason that the plant got shut down. It was basically because of that. Same thing happened.
But did all three of them get shut down, or just the one?
I don't know if they actually turned them all off at that particular point, but obviously the one that was damaged had to be shut off.
Right? Yeah. But there were three, right?
Yeah, there were multiple reactors there. And, of course, now, in the last, the last 20 years or so, I don't understand the logic that people have with this. You don't want to use fossil-based, you know, called fossil fuels, carbon-based fuels. You don't want to use carbon fuels, but you also don't want to use nuclear energy. And it's all, again, it's more human farming and it's more grift, because the problem with so-called renewables is that they're unreliable. And because of that, you have to have a backup for every watt of power you produce from solar or wind, because the sun is not always shining, the wind is not always blowing. And yet, when you want the power, you want it now.
Yep.
You're not, you know, I mean, when do you have the maximum demand in the middle of winter? Well, it would be February at 2 o'clock in the morning. The sun's never up in February at 2 o'clock.
Well, that's why if you want to have a real high energy output place, and this is going to sound really dumb, you wanted to be in Chicago 20 years ago and have your plant run at night because you got stuff for cheapo.
Yeah, because they had all this base load and nobody wanted to buy it.
Right.
But the thing is that, so you have to have this second source. Well, what does that mean? That means it's going to double the cost of your power, your electricity, because you have to have it available immediately in the event that the wind isn't blowing or the sun isn't shining. That's just the way it is. So nuclear has the advantage that it has something like a 96 or 97% availability ratio. In some cases, even better than that. But it's in the high 90s. Okay, it's as a energy source, it is extremely reliable when it's operating. Now, you know, the reason it's not 100 is because things break, right? So the reality, though, is that you have these people that are out here trying to build these AI systems that are insanely power consumptive, and at present nobody's making revenue off of them. Now that is a big problem, because you're paying to run this thing, not to mention buy it, and yet you're not collecting any money from customers on it today.
That's a problem.
And then tomorrow, yeah, and the big problem with technology, and this has been true since I've been involved in technology, so my entire professional career, if you cannot earn money off,
hey, one second, Kyle. Rick, can you do us a favor? Why don't you ask the question into AI here at PTI, AI. Ask if any of the nuclear reactors at Three Mile Island are still actually active.
There you go.
Give me a second.
Yep. Go ahead, Kyle. Sorry.
So basically, the problem that comes up is that you buy this equipment, you pay to run it, you're not making any revenue, and then the next generation shows up, and it is better, faster, cheaper. Okay, it uses less electricity, and it costs less money for each unit of output it produces. And the people that own the previous generation are instantly screwed because
These guys get these things back running, it's not just going to be Microsoft's going to get the power. I mean, if Microsoft.
Well, I understand that, but here's the what happens, though, in these situations is that, and this happened with the Bitcoin farming too. Okay, the mining thing.
Just real quick. So the two reactors melted in 1979, but the last one was actually operating up until 5 years ago.
Okay. So there was one that was running and then they shut it down. So this sounds like Palisades. Same sort of situation, right? Is that you had one that was working, was nothing wrong with it, but they turned it off for economic reasons. And those, as long as when the units were shut down, they were the maintenance was done on the building, they can be restarted at reasonable cost. Okay, now if they weren't, and worse, you got the wrecking ball out, then there's a bigger problem. But what ends up happening?
There's a big, huge expanse of territory. The two clunkers still sitting there, and they're still going to be sitting there, and they're trying to put the third one in, as it appears.
Yeah, so essentially what you have in this situation, though, is what happened over in Europe with these Bitcoin mining places. And this looks like a boon for the local economy. It is not. And the reason is that when this thing fails, and it will, you're going to see the power prices in that region double. And that's exactly what's happening.
Well, I mean, if you turn this thing back on, and one
now
day...
Now, Chief, you have a fixed cost. You better be able to sell the power.
Well, but I'm thinking you can, but... but I'm saying, let's just say they turn it back on. I'm more worried about the engineering part of this than I am this thing gets turned back on, Microsoft's going to set up near there. And they basically have promised, we're going to use, out of your 10 kilowatts, we need three right out of the gate.
Right.
And we think we want three for 5 years, and if we don't, we got to pay you something. Maybe there's a cancellation clause, maybe there isn't. Though the other seven's available, and they've decided, yeah, we could use the other seven and sell it other places, and they're gonna bring the thing back on. And it's gonna be, if they maintained it properly, they can sort of get it back on. They haven't torn the wires down from the place or anything like that, and all of a sudden you're up and good to go. Why that thing seemed a lot more ancient and screwed up. Why can't we ever get Zion back on? What was so bad about that design? That thing doesn't seem like anybody wants that thing to go.
There's nothing wrong with having these things online as long as that's, the case. But here's, you've got folks like the Sierra Club that have sued to stop these plants from operating. Okay, now this is an organization that allegedly is an environmentalist, an environmental organization, wants to protect the environment. But the cleanest form of energy that we have available to us are modern technologies, nuclear power. All right. Now, yes, there's a waste problem, which, by the way, Jimmy Carter caused because we stopped recycling.
Right.
But that's fixable. You start recycling it again. You put the high-level waste back into the reactor in a new fuel pin. You burn it up. That's the right thing to do.
Well, I guess my question is why Zion is the newest plant in around this area, and it's the one that's closed. What did they screw up when they put that place together?
I don't know that they screwed up anything.
It was a problem from the get-go. They had issues.
Yeah, there were issues out at Diablo, too, out in California with the steam generators. The problem with nuclear power is that when you start subsidizing everything else, when you start subsidizing wind and solar in particular, you're robbing the population to pay to put up the windmills and the solar panels.
Well, not really, because the state has given, I'm not disagreeing, I'm saying the state has given Commonwealth Edison a boatload of money to keep their nuclear plants running just so that didn't happen. So they've sort of evened up
I understand that, but the thing is that the if you had to actually pay to come up with the silicon and the doping materials and everything else and build them here in the United States instead of human farming them off to China. Okay, same thing with the windmills and the blades, which are fiberglass, by the way, and a serious problem. And then you've got all the rare earths and the actual turbine itself. If those costs were not shifted off onto the taxpayer as a diffuse thing, so you don't see it as a direct tax, but that's what's happening.
Yeah, well,
you would solve the problems with places like Zion.
You don't have a whole lot of problem convincing most taxpayers are getting it in the back end.
Obviously we're getting it in the back end, right? I mean, anybody with a brain in their head knows that's going on. So, yeah, I mean, but this is the problem I have with things like what Microsoft is doing and what they're doing over there with TMI is that the presumption is that the demand, the business demand, is going to remain there and be stable. And if it's not, the impact on the ratepayers because of how power companies
don't disagree.
Well, what happened is going to be extreme.
What happened to knuckleheads? And we got a dash here, Carl. But what happened to knuckleheads? We're putting the Bitcoin things next to the dams up in the Columbia River. Are those guys still pulling all that?
Yeah, but the good thing about a dam is that you can curtail that output without having a bad impact everywhere else.
Well, that's true.
Because you can just cut the water flow down to the turbine down.
Well, that's true. All right, bud. Have a nice weekend. Who knows? With all this stuff going on, I might need you before... you're on Tuesday. We're good to go. What do you think of the idea of having the class on with us on Wednesday with Russell being here? That'd be cool. We have to have everybody take a turn and come in on that.
Oh, there you go.
Because, I mean, we're going to have some grad students and some faculty. It should be interesting. I bet we get some good questions.
I bet it'd be fun.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll have everybody kind of rotate in a little bit.
All right,
take care. SP Futures down 10, NASDAQ Futures down 39. See what happens today. See if our rally continues. Maybe it will. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks. The
that's all, folks.